Millions worldwide joined protest marches against Trump and fascism, but Americans framed it as marching for women's rights, carrying I'm with her signs and pictures of Hillary Clinton, who, as a supposed champion of women's rights for her entire career, was nowhere to be found. Out of 7 candidates for the Democratic National Committee chair position, including Keith Ellison, who was endorsed by Bernie Sanders, not one single person will admit that the Democratic primaries were purposely tipped in Hillary Clinton's favor. Alternative Facts is now trending after an interview of Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway was aired, but the truthiness behind this social media protest is debatable. Today is Monday, January 23rd, 2017. I'm your host, Richard Waite, with A Mostly Accurate View. All right, guys, welcome to the first edition of A Mostly Accurate View since Donald Trump has been inaugurated as president. Thanks for joining me. I know it's been a while since my last show. I've been sick. I'm still fighting it. You might be able to tell my voice is still a little rough and I'm congested, but I am feeling a lot better. Spent a couple days just sitting on the couch eating soup, was watching the news, had my laptop open in front of me, I'm scrolling Twitter and Facebook on my phone. Every time I gathered some notes, of course, something new came up. I actually scrapped a bunch of segments that I was thinking about doing for today's show, but so I tried to keep up with things, I was tired. I was fevered. That obviously makes you sleep a lot. Everybody knows that. So I spent some of Saturday and yesterday reviewing things after my fever broke and I was just kind of tired and felt kind of drained. I just kind of was reviewing things. So there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things to talk about, obviously. So of course yesterday, as I'm reviewing things, yesterday was a brand new day, with this whole, alternative facts thing. But that's something we'll get into a little bit later, but excuse me. So, there was some protesting going on in, Washington, D.C. there on Inauguration Day, huh? Obviously that's not surprising at all. But there were marches and chants and rallies all over the place. Green Party, Black Lives Matter. There was lots of action. And of course, there were some acts of property destruction. Some people dressed all in black, broke some windows. They lit a limo on fire. They lit some garbage on fire in the middle of the street. And honestly, it's pretty tame. There really wasn't that much of that kind of stuff going on. If you noticed while the news was talking about all this, these violent protests and everything, they showed the exact same things over and over and over again because there wasn't anything else to show. And so in order to continue with this narrative of everything, oh, they're so violent, the criminals and thugs are out there just destroying DC, they had to show all of the destruction that they possibly could, which was these like three little things over and over and over and over again. That's all they had to show. So honestly, the media spent the day on Friday and much of Saturday too, just clutching their pearls and gasping as if any of this was a surprise. I mean, come on, seriously? But they framed it as violence, and I suppose there is a little bit of a violent nature to breaking windows and lighting stuff on fire, but the only actual violence against people was perpetuated by the police, who were, of course, using military-style tactics to break up legally protected protests. And it's a little different from the Women's March on Saturday, but of course that was state-sanctioned. And by state-sanctioned, I mean corporate-funded and media-approved. But to be fair, there wasn't any property damage at the Women's March. And we'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. But when we want to discuss violence, and property damage is violent behavior, but I would frame it as what it actually is, which is property damage and covered by insurance. So no hardworking people are out thousands of dollars because of this. But if we want to discuss violence, we have to discuss the causes of it, not just the effects. So why are some protests free from property damage or violence and others aren't? Well, sorry. I forgot about my absolute favorite piece of violence, which actually was against a person. So alt-right neo-Nazi spokesman Richard Spencer was giving an interview where he was explaining the Pepe the Frog meme, and someone comes up and just straight cold cocks him, and it was great. Oh, it was great. Loved it. Loved seeing that. It was, I watched it over and over. You can find that on my Twitter feed. I retweeted someone who had posted that, and I watched it at least 100 times, and it was great every single time. Never got old. But that's different, because, see, for me, that guy deserves it. Sorry. No, I don't condone violence at all, but if you're going to punch somebody in the face, that guy deserves it. No, hey, but you're shutting down his voice. You're not giving him a platform. He's got a platform. People give him a platform. And people who want to hear him will hear him. They'll hear him just fine. But by giving him a platform, that shuts down platforms of other people. Because if he has his way, if his thoughts and ideas gain traction, then other people will have less rights and they'll have less voice. So by shutting down his voice, we're actually elevating the voices of many, many other people. Now, does he have a right to say what he wants to say? Absolutely. And does he have protection from people who might criticize him? Fuck no, he doesn't. Does he legally have protection against physical abuse and harm? Yes, he does. But I gotta say, man, if you're spouting neo-Nazi fucking bullshit, you're kind of asking to get punched in the face. And frankly, I'll do it, and I'll take the assault charge, whatever. It's realistically not something that's going to be held up in whoever hit him might get, you know, a fine and some community service, maybe a little bit of probation, whatever, dude. I'll take that. I would love to punch Richard Spencer right in his face. Hey, Richard Spencer, this is a message directly to you. I don't condone violence, but if you ever came around me or my kids talking your bullshit, I will punch you in the face. That simple as that. So kudos to the guy that punched Richard Spencer in the face. I still love watching it, and I'll watch it hundreds of thousands of times. Good job. Okay, back to what I was saying. So if we want to discuss violence, we have to discuss the causes of it, not just the effects. Just like Richard Spencer got punched in his face because he runs his mouth off with some racist neo-Nazi bullshit. That's a cause. The effect was getting punched in his face. So when you look at certain protests that are free from any sort of property damage or violence and others aren't, you have to look at it. It depends on what the protest is about. And it also depends on the reach of any previous protests about the same issues. So So when people raise hell about something, right, sometimes the people are heard. For example, the effort that was recently made by Republicans to gut the Congressional Ethics Committee, well, that hit public view, and they heard about it, and they backed off. Now, will they try it again? Probably. And it'll happen some other way, I'm sure. It'll be called something else, or it'll be a little by little sort of thing instead of just one amendment to gut the whole thing. They'll try it again. But for this instance, the people were heard. So now look at other things that people protest against and how well they are heard. People have been marching and protesting for civil rights for decades now. And every time some progress is made in one area, we take huge steps backwards in others. And when the egregious systemic racism of our country's justice system becomes too much to bear, as in the shooting deaths of unarmed black men and women in the streets for nonviolent offenses, and in many cases, no fucking offenses at all, sometimes that frustration is just too much. And then you have white people saying, but violence doesn't solve anything. But then again, nonviolent protest doesn't seem to help much with that either. So what then? No violent protest and nonviolence doesn't work. So just sit back and take it. It'll work itself out in time, right? That's basically what you're saying, right? Well, look, Martin Luther King Jr. preached peaceful protest. He preached it. And he even got tired of it towards the end because he saw how little those nonviolent means were helping the cause. Sometimes they did great things. But for the all intents and purposes, when it came down to it, they're still fighting about it today. So what did those nonviolent protests do? The oppressors, okay, we'll give you a little bit, but just sit down and shut up, please. Could you sit down and shut up? We're tired of hearing it. And it's just continued. So, like Martin Luther King, I don't condone violence when it comes to protesting. I don't. I don't condone it for the plain fact that it allows the media and people who are being protested against to frame protesters as thugs and criminals. And it cheapens the effort of those fighting for equality. But also, just like Martin Luther King, I understand when it does happen. I get it. Now, to further illustrate this point, I'm going to use a quote from a very famous speech by Martin Luther King. It's not the I Have a Dream speech. That's the one that almost everybody knows. But a lot of people will remember this one, too. It's a speech titled The Other America. This one given at Stanford University in 67 or 68. So I'm going to use this quote. It's a long quote, but it's an important one. So listen carefully here. He says, "Let me say, as I've always said, and I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppressed people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve. That, in a real sense, is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way, and continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear. It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so, in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. I want to repeat that one part again. America has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And then you've got the media looking at these protests of Donald Trump on Inauguration Day, saying, oh, this, the thugs and the criminals, can you believe this? This isn't the way to do it. We need nonviolent protest. That's how you do it. When the nonviolent protests don't do anything. Well, they're thugs and criminals, though. Okay, but what pushed them to this point? See, you're so concerned with tranquility and status quo that it becomes obvious that the only way to break you from your bubble is to destroy the tranquility and status quo that you so adore. Now, this same statement, this same quote from Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, it can be said for all oppressed people worldwide. Now, he was using it, framing the civil rights movement of America, of black people being oppressed by white people, which is undeniable. But it can be said for any oppressed people. You can take that same statement and reframe it just a little bit to the oppressed working class of America versus our corporate overlords. Now, I don't want to downplay the statement that King was making about racial equality in America. And when it comes to racial equality in America, sadly, his statement is still just as valid today as when he made it almost 50 years ago. But it can also fit the situation we see today between the 1% and the rest of the population. And that is why the violent protest on Friday occurred, because the voices of the people are not being heard. They're being controlled and in many cases told what they must say. We see this in the forced duopoly of the two-party system, which effectively shuts out truly progressive voices and requires participation in a system designed to lift up a very few people on the backs of the many. And, another quote, just like Martin Luther King said, we must straighten our backs and work for our freedom. A man can't ride you unless your back is bent. We must stand up against those that would oppress us, and if our voices are not heard, we will make them louder, and we will make them echo from every corner. And the more our voices are ignored, the more things like we saw on Friday will happen. Now, like I said, a couple of small fires and a few broken windows is actually pretty tame. Look at Ferguson. Look at the LA riots after Rodney King. Look at the Watts riots. What we saw on Friday was far from as violent as it could have been. So instead of clutching pearls and gasping about criminals and thugs, perhaps the media would do a greater service by actually discussing the things that cause these acts before they get worse. And ignoring these causes and ignoring those voices only leads in one direction: more violence and protest. And it'll be worse. Now, of course, the media isn't going to point out how corporate America and our corporate overlords are contributing to these feelings of discontentment and unrest, because why would they? The corporate media is the establishment. Those TV anchors you see, they get paid millions to say what they say, and more importantly, to not say what they don't say. They don't want to rock that corporate boat. That's their lifeblood. To say that people are getting violent because they see no other option is to take blame. So instead, they frame it as, why, these unpatriotic people are destroying America. We don't need this violence. Unpatriotic? It seems to me that this nation was founded on a very violent protest. You remember, none of us were alive for it, but you might have read about it, heard a little bit about it, something called the Revolutionary War, where the citizens of this country stood up to an oppressive tyrant. And that, of course, followed some other acts of violence and property destruction. The Boston Tea Party, for example. So realistically, protest in any form, even violent protests with property damage, are about as patriotic as you could get. And when every other avenue has failed time and time and time again, what choice do we have except sitting down and bending to our masters or rising up? Now, I know that this sounds like I advocate violence, even though I say I don't, but I don't. But like I said, I understand how it can come about. And if we want to avoid any more of it, I would like to avoid any more violence. If we want to avoid any more of it, it's time to start listening. Otherwise, it will just get worse. I want my kids to grow up knowing peace, not violence. I want them to know that when it comes down to it, the people in charge really are looking out for us. But this won't happen unless the people in charge actually start looking out for us. And until they do, the violence will continue. And it'll get worse. And it'll start to get bloody. This isn't me advocating violent uprisings. This is me looking at history and how many times this path has been traveled before in various other countries, and knowing that America is no different. This is me saying that if we don't get some real positive and progressive changes soon, this is what we have to look forward to. This is me saying that if you don't want this to happen, we need to act and create some real change and opportunity in this country and start rebuilding the middle class, start reining in the wealthy 1%, start elevating the working class, start actually helping the poor. Because if we continue in the manner we are, America will surely be destroyed. Something else will arise in its place, and I'm more afraid of what that may be than I am of Donald Trump. And I'm not scared of it for me. I will always speak out against fascism and oppression, and fuck it, I'll go to jail for it if it comes to that, because at least my son will know that I went to jail standing up for what is right and good instead of being a coward and saying, this is what we have to work with, let's make the best of it, because goddammit, I know we can do better than this. No, I'm not scared of it for me. I'm scared of it for my kids and yours. We know that we can do better, but do they? What are they learning right now? Are they learning that, well, this is just the way it is, accept it, get through the education mill and go get a job that'll make someone else rich? Are they learning that submission is the best policy? It's not giving in, it's surviving. Bullshit. It's not what my kid is going to grow up thinking, because I know he is better than this, and therefore I have to be better than this. So I told myself a few days ago that I needed to move on from Hillary Clinton. She's done. She has no office. She has no power. And with the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative folding, she has no influence, save for with the Hillbots on Twitter and people like our good friend Peter Dow. So it's time to move on. You know, we have actual progressives who are trying to lead the good fight, and we have fake progressives like Cory Booker who are setting us back every time he speaks. And you have Trump and the rest of the conservatives who are already trying to ruin everything. So it's important to elevate the true progressive fighters in our government, to call out those phony neoliberals that call themselves progressives but vote against their people's best interests, and to actively push back against Trump and the GOP agenda, right? Okay. But then, every time I try to leave her alone, she does something else to grab a little more of that spotlight, and then the Hillbots are all like, OMG, Hillary said something. I wonder if she'll actually reply to my tweet this time, or maybe she'll retweet me. It doesn't matter. I'll still tell her how much I love her. Hillary, I love you. And these same Hillbots accuse Bernie supporters and Trump supporters of buying into the cult of personality, and they're wrong about that. The one thing that most Bernie supporters and Trump supporters have in common is a desire to break away from business as usual politics, and that was something that Hillary Clinton would have given us to a T. So people swore it was her turn and that she should have won because she was so qualified, except they can point to very few qualifications, and those that they could point to ended up not fucking mattering at all. She stood up for women's rights and children's rights and LGBTQ rights and civil rights, except that everything she did as Secretary of State resulted in the deaths of thousands of brown men, women, and children, and she took money from nations that engaged in oppression of women, murdering of homosexuals, and legalized pedophilia. But this isn't new. It just boggles my mind that some of these people are still so enamored with this person that they can still overlook all these things as trivial when they are clearly not. In fact, they are so not trivial that they cost her the election and left us with Trump. But yesterday's march, man, it really was something. Now, I don't want to take away anything from the millions of women who were there to actually stand up and fight for women's rights. And this wasn't just a localized happening. These marches took place all around the globe. The most historic protest march in history, really. Or at the very least, the most historic in U.S. history. And yeah, a lot of women were actually there to stand up for their rights. A lot of men, too. Mostly women. But the thing is, and I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. Mostly, the people who were marching for women's rights were the ones in other countries. You see, in the U.S., it was nothing but a giant Hillary Clinton rally. You got I'm with her signs, cardboard cutouts of Hillary held high, taking selfies with corporate Democratic shills like Cory Booker and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You got Madonna on stage talking about blowing up the White House, and she's worth $500 million. Hey, ladies, she doesn't give a fuck about you. Her rights are already bought and paid for. She's not fighting for you. She's thinking about themes for her next personal reinvention. And there was a lot of people calling this behavior out. And of course, along with that came the usual accusations of sexism and misogyny. And look, for some people, it actually might have been some of that. For some people, anxious and fearful at the streets filled with a subset of the population and their allies standing up and demanding that their rights be recognized by the incoming administration, anxious and fearful at the power wielded by large groups of people, anxious and fearful that the patriarchy is being chipped away faster and faster. Now, for those people decrying this march, it is about misogyny. But for some, it isn't. Personally, I want to see equality for all people, regardless of race, gender, spirituality, or lack thereof, socioeconomic status, no matter who you are, all people should have the exact same rights, freedoms, and protections worldwide. And that's kind of the rub here. See, this worldwide women's march was indeed worldwide, but the major focus was on the U.S. for the simple fact that it was after Trump's inauguration, and his election is why there is so much concern for women's rights. Not the oppression of women in the Middle East or the mass gender side of baby girls in Asia, but the rights of women in the wealthiest country on earth. And yeah, it was a worldwide march, but it was framed by Trump's election. So all eyes were on the U.S. And what did we have? We had a bunch of people, men included, who were out there saying, Trump's not my president. I mean, there was actually a banner carried that read, Madam President. For Christ's sake, the whole thing was just a de facto Hillary rally. And like I said, I don't want to take anything from those millions of women around the world who are actually marching for women's rights around the world. But as per usual, for the U.S., a lot of the people marching in the U.S. were marching for their own selves, and it had nothing to do with women's rights. It was all about Hillary not winning the election. And that cheapens the cause. And to continue to elevate a person that lost, not because she was cheated like Bernie was, not because she got screwed over by the Russians, but because the truth about her came out and far more people decided that a career politician and business as usual was simply too unpalatable. To elevate a person who lost on virtue of what she has done in direct contradiction to who she claims to be, to herald her as a champion for your cause, cheapens your cause. Hillary Clinton is no champion for women's rights, and never has been. She sold her face, her voice, and her access to the highest bidder. She took millions from countries that actively oppress women. This march, which was supposed to be for women's rights, immediately became not about women's rights, but about Hillary Clinton when the add her name hashtag popped up. So for those who may have missed it, or just don't do the Twitter.com thing, in the day or so before the march, a new hashtag campaign popped up, and it was hashtag add her name. Now, this was focused on a list of women that the Women's March was supposed to be honoring, and Hillary's name wasn't on it. Now, the amount of attention that got in and of itself basically said, man, these other women aren't really enough to march for. Put Hillary's name up there. How dare you not have Hillary's name up there? And a few people understood the biggest problem with that. And God help you if you tried to explain it to the people who didn't. See, one of the names on the list was the late environmental activist, Berta Cáceres. She's an indigenous Honduran who was murdered in her home, before which she singled out Hillary Clinton as one of the leading causes of the coup, which took place in Honduras in 2009, which the country still has not recovered from, and it is now one of the most dangerous places in the world. Now, Cáceres was killed, and Hillary Clinton didn't actually pull the trigger, but people were screaming for Hillary's name to be added to a list with the name of a deceased woman who was killed, albeit indirectly, as a result of actions taken by the U.S. under Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. But did that matter to the women in the U.S.? Fuck no, not at all. See, for them, it was all about her. And by her, I don't really mean Hillary Clinton. I mean the actual pronoun her. See, for a lot of them, Hillary Clinton personified women everywhere. A strong leader, a mother, a grandmother, a wife, a success. And yes, despite losing the presidency again, she has been one of the most successful women in the world. And so all of these slogans, add her name, I'm with her, it's her turn. Now, while the actual focus of that pronoun was Hillary Clinton, for many, it was just about women in general. They viewed Hillary's rise to the White House as progress for women's rights, destroying the rest of the white man mold for president that Obama had already put a huge crack in as the first African-American U.S. president. And that's where the message gets muddied. See, for a lot of people, the her part wasn't nearly as important as the Hillary Clinton part. See, sure, it would have moved women's rights and equality forward, or would it? See, her policies and actions didn't differ from her predecessors. her lifestyle and the way she went about selling access to the State Department and diplomatic appointments, all that was the same. And therein lies the problems here. We were expected to elect her simply on virtue of being a woman and not being Trump. And that's why she lost. Now, would I like to see a female president? Absolutely. Would I like to see a female president elected just because she's a female? Fuck no. Policy matters more. And to raise a stink about her name not being added when the march was supposed to be out about women's rights worldwide, it cheapens the cause. And if you want proof of this? All right, well, where the fuck was she? Did she march? Nope. She's still hiding out. She tweeted about it. Now, perhaps she's trying a new strategy for 2020. Trump tweets and doesn't actually do things, so maybe that'll work for her, right? But then you look, and you see Bernie actually marching with the Women's March, you know, like he's been doing his entire career and not just when it's convenient or a good photo op, marching for civil rights, marching alongside Martin Luther King and John Lewis, standing with Standing Rock, marching for women's rights. It's just a normal day in the life of Bernie. Guess what, everybody? Bernie lost the election too, but he's been out there every single day, still doing what he always does, fighting for equality, fighting for you, fighting for me, fighting for every person who can't fight for themselves. So while you whine about Hillary's name not being on a list, why don't you stop for a second, look around you, realize who is actually fighting for you and your rights as women, as minorities, as people oppressed by the 1%, and start thinking about what we can do in the future instead of what you didn't get a couple of months ago. Let's not forget, this Women's March that is being heralded as the most peaceful and monumental demonstration in U.S. history and is also being touted as spontaneous dissenting action was anything but spontaneous. This was a co-opted event. These marches were planned for months already with permits and march routes and everything already in place. But originally, they were supposed to be coronation celebrations. But when the inevitable winner lost, they quickly were transformed into a march for women's rights because Trump is a threat to women's rights. Well, he is. But here's the thing. If it was really an anti-Trump march, as it was framed, it would have been about far more than just women's rights. It would have been about Trump, but it wasn't. It was about women's rights, which is very, very important. Don't get me wrong. But it's not more important than the rights of any other subset of the population. Now, it was about women's rights and about Hillary Clinton not being president. And honestly, if Hillary had lost to any other Republican, Cruz, Rubio, Bush, hell, even Carly Fiorina, this women's rights march would have still happened, although it would have been under a different banner. If it had been Fiorina, it would have absolutely been under a different banner because they couldn't say women's rights with a woman winning the presidency. Obviously, Fiorina was never going to win the presidency. But if she had, these marches would have still happened. It just would have been under a different banner, which tells me that this isn't it wasn't about women's rights and it wasn't about Trump. It was about Hillary Clinton not fucking winning. Now, to be perfectly clear, that isn't to say that this is the case worldwide. And that isn't to say that this is the case for all women who marched in the U.S. But that is to say that this is a case for the majority of the marches in the U.S. Those women who are actually out there marching for women's rights worldwide and here in the US. I applaud you and I stand with you. But the women who are out there with the I'm with her signs and the Madam President banner and carrying pictures of Hillary like you were marching in a funeral parade, you're the reason that this cause is cheapened. When you start supporting a woman who fights for women's rights around the world, not just a woman, because that's sexist. When you start supporting a person who fights for women's rights around the world, Bernie Sanders, and not just one rich white woman's rise to power in the White House, then we can talk about the purity of your cause. But as long as you tout Hillary's loss as the sexism you fight against, you'll be seen as opportunistic and hollow, just like her. Now, like I said, I want to move past Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of work to do fighting Trump and the centrist, corporatist, third-way Democratic Party and the GOP. I'ma still call out Democrats when they do dumb shit like Cory Booker did, and I will still call out Republicans when they push through disastrous and awful plans like they are right now, but I don't want to return to Clinton if I don't have to, so please, stop making me have to. All right, guys, I'm going to take a quick break, get a cup of coffee. I suggest you guys do the same. Join me back here in just a couple of minutes. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of Trump's cabinet picks. Well, one in particular, Jeff Sessions. And we're going to talk about some alternative facts. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
All right, guys, welcome back to A Mostly Accurate Review. Just a quick reminder for you. You can always reach out to me on Facebook, facebook.com/A Mostly Accurate View. You can also tweet at me, mostly_accurate. You can email me, amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. Talk to me. Tell me something. Like, what do you want to hear talked about? What did I miss? What did I get wrong? Share with your friends and family, and let's keep this conversation going. Discussion is how we progress. Don't ever shut out opposing viewpoints. Don't ever just take someone's word for it. Do your own research. Look into things. Talk about things. And like I said, invite opposing viewpoints. Someone else may have a viewpoint that you haven't thought of. Things aren't always black and white. There's a lot of gray in a lot of different areas. Things have nuance. So if you think you got it right, you might, but it's always good to take other people's viewpoints into consideration, especially people that you don't always disagree with, or you don't always agree with, I should say. Not to say that, you know, they'll be able to convince you otherwise, but just to open yourself up to the fact that other people do see things differently and they have valid reason to. So, keep the conversation going, guys. Keep your minds open and educate yourselves. Inform yourselves. Don't listen to mainstream corporate media. They're lying to you. They're always lying to you. If they're speaking, they're probably lying to you. And even if they're being somewhat truthful, they're spinning it so that you think what they want you to think. They want you to think certain things and act certain ways. And they're going to give you the information that they want that will lead you to think a certain way or act a certain way. And it's up to you to counteract that. And I try to give you my viewpoint on things. And personally, I think my viewpoint is pretty fucking accurate sometimes. Most times, hence the name of the podcast, A Mostly Accurate View. I've been wrong, and I'll admit when I'm wrong. And I can admit that I'm wrong when I'm wrong. But for the most part, I try to remain as accurate as I possibly can for you. But even then, don't just take my word for it. Look into these things. Okay? That being said, we're going to move on now. All right. So last show, I spoke briefly about the ghost list that was leaked of the potential cabinet picks of Hillary Clinton if she had won the White House. I said I'd get into more detail about it, but I don't really think I need to. The people on that list are not going to be cabinet members. They're not. They hold no position of power. Mostly, most of them are ordinary citizens now. Well, not ordinary, but you know what I mean. But it doesn't matter who she picked for what position, and going into detail about it would be pointless. It would just be an exercise in, see, these people are bad for these reasons, and it would just be another example of unwittingly defending Donald Trump and his cabinet picks, which I can't in good conscience do. He and his cabinet picks are all awful. Clinton did have John Podesta as Secretary of State, which would have been awful. Would he have been better than Rex Tillerson? Well, we assume so. Loretta Lynch would possibly have been retained as Attorney General. No big surprise. She didn't charge Hillary with obvious crimes. And then you have all her personal allies, Neera Tanden, Huma Abedin, Jennifer Granholm, Jake Sullivan, Tom Perez, the usual suspects. And then the vague and mysterious, likely an African-American who could have been picked for the EPA or maybe for education, but it needed to be an African-American to give the impression of ethnic diversity, and it would have been a centrist, corporatist, warmongering orgy. But even given this brief overview of her possible cabinet picks and looking at Trump's cabinet, it's obvious whose is worse. But that's part of the problem here. So, yes, Trump's cabinet is worse than Clinton's would have been. But that in no way means that Clinton's cabinet was okay or even good. No, they were both horrible, one slightly more horrible than the other, and this is supposedly the best we could come up with. We judge Clinton's cabinet or policies, or even take Clinton out of it. In any election, in any campaign, we judge one candidate's platform by giving it virtue of just not being as bad as the other person. What kind of sense of hope is that? What kind of direction is that? Well, we're going to be fucked either way, but this fucking over here is a lot harder and faster than that fucking over there, so we'll go for that one. Probably too much to hope for a nice dinner before we get fucked. Now, we grade our candidates on a curve of how bad the other candidates are. And then we herald even the smallest victories while that candidate does plenty of awful things under the covers. Look at Barack Obama. So many people were upset when he had just a few days left in office. They're crying, tearful. Why? What was so awesome about him? What exactly did he do? The ACA, which was mangled by Republicans and pharma lobbyists before it could be passed by a Democratic supermajority, and it mandated capitalism under tax penalty. What else? Bombing the shit out of 7 countries? Mass deportations? Now, he did create some job growth, but even those numbers are skewed because the jobs he created were largely part-time or minimum wage or both, and they replaced good-paying manufacturing jobs and tech sector jobs with good benefits. Bailed out the banks and didn't hold them accountable. Bailed out the auto industry. Okay, credit for that. In the meantime, he pushed and tried to force the TPP through, which would have destroyed all of the job growth he created and would have given our nation's sovereignty up. We gotta court corporations and give them free rein while allowing them to sue for potential lost profits resulting from legislation put into place to protect workers or the environment. Dude, Obama was so awesome. I can't believe he's leaving office. Look what's coming behind him. No, that is the real problem. And aside from not knowing what Obama was really about, it's that Trump is following him. Everyone's still stuck on the hope and change, which never came. And they love Obama for who he appears to be. And I'll admit, Obama is a real likable guy. He speaks well. He carries himself with class and style. He's got a cool edge to him. It's probably a gas at parties. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have Trump, who is a loudmouth blowhard who needs constant ego stroking and attention and does everything that he can to get it. He's vulgar, crude, reminds you of the one old guy that hangs out at the park all by himself, never says anything to anybody, but just watches and making everyone else uncomfortable. He's gross. He's scandalous. He's concerned with personal enrichment, and he'll use his office to do it. And with that kind of contrast, Barry looks positively angelic. But let's not get it twisted here. As awful as Trump is, it doesn't take away from how awful Obama was for progressives, the ones who elected him twice and fell for his progressive rhetoric in his speech while ignoring his neoliberal, corporatist, warmongering actions. So the same goes for this leaked ghost cabinet list. Yes, it would have been better than Trump's cabinet, but would it have actually been good? No. Now, there are other people who I can think of who, had they won the White House, would have put together a cabinet that was actually good, not just better than the other guys, but good. Good for the American working class, good for the education and future of our kids, good for the environment, good for everybody. But instead, we're stuck with this. And by this, I don't mean Trump's cabinet, but by this, I mean the idea that a bad cabinet isn't bad if someone else's cabinet is worse. That's horseshit. So like I said, I'm not going to go into detail about Hillary Clinton's potential cabinet selections. No need to. Just understand that believing her cabinet would have been good simply on virtue of Trump's cabinet being so awful is dishonest to yourself. Instead of the lesser of two evils, we need to work towards the greater good, and that won't happen under Trump, and that wouldn't have happened under Clinton. So let's move on to other things that are a little more important, shall we? So we haven't We haven't really talked very much about Trump's cabinet on this show. And as much time as I spend bashing the Democrats for their stupidity, we have to be fair and bash the GOP and our orange-faced president when it's appropriate. And if his cabinet is any indication, we'll have plenty of opportunity to do just that. So now, we've all heard all of the nasty things there are to hear about Trump's executive board. And they bear repeating. Rex Tillerson has ties to Russia through dealings as the ExxonMobil CEO. He got the friendly happy medal or whatever from Putin. Obvious shill for the fossil fuel industry. You got Steve Mnuchin for Treasury. He's Goldman Sachs. You got Betsy DeVos for Education. She's from Michigan. I live in Michigan. I've seen what she's done. Okay. She wants to privatize schools. She loves charter schools. Fucking loves them. You got Rick Perry for energy. He loves oil. You got Scott Pruitt to protect the environment as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And he's a fucking climate denier who sued the EPA as Oklahoma State Attorney General. He also loves oil. Funny, there's a running theme here. Usually climate denier and oil lover goes hand in hand. Yeah, these are all bad people. And they're all going to do bad things. And each one of them deserves scrutiny and criticism. But I want to focus on one person in particular. And that's Mr. Jeff Sessions, the Trump administration pick for Attorney General. So we've heard a bunch of the narrative surrounding Sessions, such as his racist comments and policies. Representative John Lewis, a civil rights hero, spoke passionately against Sessions. Now, of course, I have to call out dishonesty wherever I see it, and just like he did when he tried to downplay Bernie's role in the civil rights movement, he tried to upplay Sessions' racism. Now, I'm not denying that Sessions had some backward policy ideas, and chances are he said some foul things. He is from the Deep South, and he is a rich old white man, and there's a good chance he's pretty goddamn racist. But to keep things honest, let's actually look at what he has done regarding race relations in the U.S. So, he wrongly prosecuted black activists for voter fraud. Now, that's a standard Republican standby for vote suppression. But the voter fraud, and we got to fight this voter fraud, voter ID laws, and fight this voter fraud over here with our voter ID laws. Okay, that's voter suppression is what it is. Now, after the passage of the Voting Rights Act, one Mr. Albert Turner, who marched with Lewis and Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma, he became Alabama's field secretary for King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He was known as Mr. Voter Registration. Now, in the Democratic primary of September 1984, FBI agents hid behind the bushes of the Perry County Post Office waiting for Turner and his fellow activist Spencer Hoag to mail 500 absentee ballots on behalf of elderly black voters. And when Turner and Hoag left, the feds seized the envelopes from the mailing slots. 20 elderly black voters from Perry County were bussed 3 hours to Mobile, where they were interrogated by law enforcement officials and forced to testify before a grand jury. 92-year-old Willie Bright was so frightened of the law that he wouldn't even admit he'd voted. Now, Sessions, at the time, was a 39-year-old U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Alabama, and he charged Turner, his wife Evelyn, and Hoag with 29 counts of mail fraud, altering absentee ballots, and conspiracy to vote more than once. They faced over 100 years in jail on criminal charges and felony statutes. But after deliberating for less than 3 hours, the jury returned a not guilty verdict on all counts. Now this, and other things, led him, Sessions, to being dismissed for nomination of a federal judgeship position on the District Court of Alabama under Reagan. Albert Turner's brother flew to Washington from Perry County to oppose Sessions, and in a highly unusual move, attorneys from the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division also testified against him. Jerry Hebert, who worked in the Department of Justice voting section, told Congress that Sessions had called the NAACP and the ACLU communist-inspired and un-American, and he labeled the white civil rights lawyer Jim Blackshear as a disgrace to his race. Now, Thomas Figures, a black assistant U.S. attorney in Mobile, said that Sessions had repeatedly referred to him as boy. And he also said that he heard from colleagues that Sessions used to think that the KKK were okay until he learned that they were pot smokers. Well, Sessions admitted to calling the VRA a piece of intrusive legislation. Ted Kennedy said, "Mr. Sessions' role in the voting case fraud in Alabama alone should bar him from sitting on the bench." So Sessions hardly reformed his views after he was elected to the Senate in 1996. He frequently earned an F rating from groups like the NAACP and consistently opposed the bread and butter civil rights agenda. That's according to Hillary Shelton, the director of the NAACP's Washington office. Now, Sessions voted to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act in 2006, but praised the Supreme Court's decision to gut the law in 2013, cluelessly saying, "If you go to Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, people aren't being denied the vote because of the color of their skin." Just as one example of ongoing voter discrimination. His home state of Alabama tried to close 31 DMV offices, many in majority black counties, after instituting a strict photo ID requirements to vote. Okay. See, that's okay. Photo ID requirements to vote. Okay. Fine. Make it easy for all eligible voters to get photo ID. Oh no, we're going to require you to have photo ID to vote. But we're going to close the place that you go to get a photo ID in your county. You're going to have to travel hours away to get one. So that is vote suppression right there. So all that sounds pretty bad, right? And it is. However, in the spirit of being fair, can we look and find anything that Sessions has done to benefit minorities? Other than prosecuting KKK members and seeking the death penalty for them, or marching in the Salem 50th anniversary march alongside, wait for it, John Lewis, holding the man's fucking hand, voting for the extension of the Civil Rights Act? How about voting to confirm Eric Holder as the first black attorney general? How about spearheading the effort to award the Congressional Gold Medal to Rosa Parks? Or how about campaigning against segregationist George Wallace? Now, many of these things may have just strictly been for PR's sake. I'm going to go ahead and say that a lot of them were. And do they erase the other things that he did? No, not at all. But they do kind of balance it out some. Now, there are plenty of reasons to oppose Sessions as Attorney General, not that it matters now, but with plenty of reasons, why make one up? Or at the very least, frame it to seem like he's a racist because of these certain things while ignoring these other things that suggest otherwise. Now, I'm not a fan of Sessions, and I'm not saying that he isn't a racist, but what I am saying is that with the evidence in front of me, I can't say that racism is a reason why I'm not a fan of Sessions. Maybe he is a racist. Or maybe, as U.S. attorney, he was told to prosecute for certain reasons, and if he wanted to keep his job, he better do as he was instructed. Did that happen? I don't know. But neither do you. So, what is a reason to oppose Sessions as Attorney General? Personally, my biggest reason is his stance on drugs, in particular on marijuana. He said, quote, "Good people don't smoke marijuana." What? Are you fucking kidding me? Good people do smoke marijuana. Bad people do too. Smoking marijuana doesn't make you good or bad. It makes you a marijuana smoker. It's Sessions stand against the slow legalization of marijuana. He will likely look to enforce the federal prohibition of reefer, even in states that have already legalized it, including for medicinal uses. Now, me personally, I'm an advocate of marijuana. The benefits of marijuana far outweigh any of the unproven yet still cited dangers. We can go over this if you like, but I won't be telling you anything you don't already know, such as not one single person has ever died from marijuana use. When the prohibition on marijuana was begun under a framing of public health and safety concerns, but in reality was completely political, you know the drill. But it brings me to something worse. See, this failed war on drugs that we have spent trillions on over the past few decades. Not only do I advocate the complete legalization of marijuana, regulated and taxed, of course, but I also advocate for the complete legalization of all drugs, regulated and taxed, of course. Yeah, all drugs, even heroin. But Richard, I mean, okay, I can understand pot, but people actually overdose on heroin. Yeah, they do. And a lot of the reason that they overdose is because it's unregulated. And look, it's not like the fact that it's illegal stops people from using it. You can tell that by the heroin epidemic we're currently seeing today. And a lot of that epidemic has to do with legal opiate-derived pharmaceuticals. Now, sure, these drugs are dangerous, without a doubt. You buy some dope off the streets, and you have literally no idea what's going into your vein. None. It could be cut with other shit, stronger shit like fentanyl. And what you think is a normal dose ends up being too much. Regulation ends that. Taxation can fund real solutions for addiction, not incarceration. How many drug addicts go to jail and just keep using? Or they might stop using while they're in jail, but they start using again when they get out. See, recidivism is a huge problem with our drug policy because our drug policy looks at addiction as a criminal offense rather than a public health crisis. You want to fix the drug problem? Start looking at rehabilitation instead of incarceration as a solution. So let's look at some numbers here. Now, here in Michigan, it costs around $35,000 on average to house an inmate for 1 year in prison. Now, in 2012, 3,300 people in Michigan were convicted and sent to prison for nonviolent crimes involving drugs. So, just for the people convicted in 2012, just for the people convicted in that year, the state of Michigan, or various counties, municipalities, spend over $110 million a year to house just the people convicted in 2012. Now, the numbers differ around the country. Some states like New York are more than double that cost per inmate. And this money is largely paid to private, for-profit prisons around the country. Now, those prisons lobby politicians to keep laws in place that guarantee those prisons stay full over capacity in many cases, and then new prisons are built, filled, build another one, fill it, build another one, fill it, so on and so on. Now, rehabilitation, on the other hand, costs thousands less per person, has a lesser rate of recidivism, and focuses on what is causing the addictive behaviors rather than the symptoms, which is the actual drug abuse. It gives drug users a chance to make their lives better without felony charges on their record, which make it virtually impossible to find gainful employment and even housing in many cases. It gives them a chance to become functioning members of society. Prison, on the other hand, just creates more prisoners. So do I think drug dealers and smugglers should be off the hook? No. Their actions are breaking the law and cause violence in many, many cases. Now, should drug addicts be off the hook? Don't their actions create the market for drug dealers? Yes, they do, but that market has always and will always be there. The reason that the market is illegal is because the government wants it that way. There's a lot of different factors. But with the amount of money that the pharmaceutical industry makes and how they have cornered part of that market by letting people believe that their medications are safer than street drugs and that's why they're illegal and the doctor has your best interest in mind, never mind the fact that he or his HMO organization gets kickbacks from the pharma company that produces the heart medication that has side effects that include heart palpitations. Seriously, have you ever listened to that really fast talking guy at the end of drug commercials where he lists off a slew of possible side effects that sound progressively worse with each one he gets to? How in the fuck are antidepressants that have the possibility of suicidal thoughts as a side effect approved for use? Oh, I don't know. Perhaps the revolving door of pharma lobbyists working for the FDA? You know how to stop the illegal flow of drugs and all of the violence created by a black market? Remove the black market. The drugs will never stop. Decriminalize them, regulate them, tax them, use that revenue, which will literally be in the billions, possibly trillions, just look at Colorado and Washington, use that money to fix our education system, fix our infrastructure, pay for college, pay for healthcare, and don't forget that the tax revenue from regulated drugs will be supplemented by the billions saved on prison costs. But no, I guess making marijuana illegal again across the board makes more sense fiscally because those damn dirty hippies make me uncomfortable. Right, Mr. Sessions? Now, before people get all uppity and say, see, if Hillary had won, she probably would have kept Loretta Lynch and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I want to remind everyone of the time that Loretta Lynch came out and she stood up to the DEA and said that marijuana should be legalized medicinally and recreationally. Remember that? Oh, no, you don't remember because she never did that. Now, she might not have prosecuted federally like Sessions might. Can't say that he will because we don't know yet, but it's quite possible and perhaps even likely, but she certainly didn't push for legalization. And with Clinton's statement on medical marijuana, you know, needs more research, you can bet that recreational legalization would have been off the table under her administration. So yeah, Sessions could be a step backwards, and that is very concerning to me. And not because I just want to smoke pot, although I will be honest and say that I wish I could, but I can't for completely different reasons. But when I did smoke pot, the laws regarding it didn't matter to me. And that in itself is a statement on the failed war on drugs. Now, excuse me. There are other things to be concerned about Sessions 4. And I'm sure we'll see plenty of it come to light throughout his tenure. So yeah, Sessions and the rest of Trump's cabinet is plenty scary for a lot of different reasons. And that's why it's so important to stop looking at what could have been, and that includes Bernie to a certain extent, and start looking at what is and how we can fight it. Now, with that being said, I'll probably still keep talking about Bernie because he is still actively fighting Trump and fighting for regular folks like you and me. And in that, I will probably mention how he could have been a lot more effective if the Democratic Party hadn't fucking insisted through cheating and scheming to run the only candidate incapable of beating Trump. And I'll probably be forced to talk about Hillary at times because of that. But I'll do my best to keep it in reference to actual current events that are going on rather than talking about things that are over and done with. It's time to move forward and stop looking back. But, for fuck's sake, Democrats, remember this and remember why we are where we are right now. You did this, and looking at the panel of candidates for DNC chair, it looks like you still haven't learned a single goddamn thing. Looks like you're going to keep the same strategy that, look how awful they are, we aren't that awful. If you don't want that level of awful, you should vote for a lesser level of awful. That whole strategy. Simply wait for us to be so disgusted that we have no choice but to vote for you. Of course, you see how well that strategy worked out for you this time around, huh? No? Oh, shit. So the Democratic National Committee is holding elections for the person who will replace interim chair Donna Brazile, who, in spite of obvious unethical behaviors during the primaries, was named as a temporary replacement for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who, because of obvious unethical behaviors during the primaries, was forced to resign from that position. Now, there are seven candidates for this position, and one of them, Keith Ellison, was actually endorsed by Bernie Sanders. Others include Tom Perez, Ray Buckley, Jamie Harrison, Sally Boynton Brown. You know what? It doesn't matter. What does matter is that every single one of them denies any wrongdoing by the DNC in the primaries. Imagine that. Now, while they preach unity, unity, we must stand united against Trump, they further alienate left-wing progressives and Sanders supporters with this type of denial. So are we really going to sit and play patty cake with the establishment and claiming that nothing was wrong? The goddamn emails prove this shit. Denying it in the face of actual fucking evidence is like denying climate change. But, I mean, why would we expect anything different? You know where these people were on Saturday while the biggest protest in the history of the U.S. was going on? They were in Florida at a fucking resort in Aventura meeting with Correct the Record troll master David fucking Brock and his group of extremely fucking wealthy campaign funders. Now, there was one exception to this, and that's South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So he deserves credit for not participating in this wealth circle jerk, but the rest of them and the DNC as a whole need to be called out for this. This is exactly the thing which gave us Trump and let the Republicans take over every facet of our government, state and federal, and it's the Democrats ignoring progressives and instead going to get bukkakied by thousands of dollars from corporate donors. Now, those who held their heads in the sand throughout the primaries might not know or remember this, but the entire Sanders voter base was harassed by Brock's troll army and the Democratic establishment who fucking lost because they were courting corporate donors and championing a centrist, corporatist, neoliberal, war hawk, third-way Democrat, and it's still doing the exact same fucking thing. So, quick little message. Hey, Democrats, we fucking see you, assholes. You seriously just lost the most winnable election ever to the most beatable candidate ever by doing the exact same thing you're doing right fucking now. You shut out progressives in the primaries, told us you didn't need us, told us that the adults would handle it, then you begged for our help, lost anyway, and now you're still shutting out progressives. You're denying your own part in your massive fucking failure, and you're still courting corporate donors. You're going to continue to do so, and then when elections come, you'll spout some progressive talking points to get votes and completely turn your back on those progressives as soon as you get offices because you have to appease your corporate donors who bought those offices for you, or your donors will dry up like they did with the Clinton Foundation. And we fucking see you. We see this happening. Now look, I know it was a long time ago, but remember that time you lost the presidency to Donald fucking Trump? Yeah, this is why. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. You people really don't get it, do you? You really don't ever learn. How can we convince you that the strategy you're using is a losing one? I mean, you already lost everything and you're barely hanging on by a thread. You're holding out for the hope that Trump will be so bad that we won't have any choice but to vote Democrats back into power. And you see how well that worked out for you, don't you? But there's some bad news coming, Democrats. Real bad. Trump will do plenty to piss off progressives. He's already starting to. The ACA is being repealed with no replacement for one. But I got something for you to think about. Guess what Trump just signed an executive order to back out of? The goddamn TPP. Now that's a fucking win for progressives. And that came from a Republican. No, man, actually, that came from Donald fucking Trump. and you think that rubbing elbows and bumping uglies with wealthy donors in Florida is going to help you win elections and regain power? Oh, for fuck's sake, Democrats, you guys are so fucking stupid. All right, so Donald Trump, as one of his first acts of President of the United States, signed an executive order that backed the United States out of the TPP, and that's good. He was consistently against it, just as Bernie was, and Hillary, well, I mean, she came around, I guess, but every other corporatist Democrat was all for it because Obama and also corporate money, and it got a lot of Republican support, too, because corporate money, but not as much support from Republicans as it got from Democrats, because also Obama. So credit where it's due, absolutely, good move, Trump. So we took a step forward, and then Trump drags us two steps back. All right. So the president also signed two other executive actions, one that places a hiring freeze on non-military federal workers, and another that cuts off federal funding for foreign organizations that provide abortions. He's also promising to slash taxes and regulations for corporations, not a surprise. But while we slash regulations, we already have hundreds of thousands, even millions of people who are drinking and bathing and cooking with lead-contaminated water. It's a perfect solution for that. Go ahead and cut regulation. Right. So he promised business leaders Monday, or today, sorry, that he would cut taxes massively and slash regulations by 75%. He also warned the 12 corporate CEOs gathered at the White House that he would impose a border tax on goods imported by companies that moved jobs out of the United States. This is a direct quote from Donald Trump. What we're doing is we are going to be cutting taxes massively for both the middle class and for companies, and that's massively. A bigger thing, and that surprised me, is the fact that we're going to be cutting regulation massively. I think we can cut regulations by 75%, maybe more, but by 75%. So, just a little clarity on that for you. Okay, so there's a tax burden, right? There's a tax burden in the United States. And when taxes get cut on one section of the population, that tax burden doesn't go away. It gets shifted onto other people. So when he says he's going to cut taxes for businesses and for the middle class. Now, that can be taken a couple of different ways because it's not very clear. Does he mean he's going to raise money on wealthy individuals, private individuals? Cut taxes, corporate taxes, but those people, you know, with millions and millions and millions of dollars are going to see a tax increase? Doubt it. That's his buddies. That's him. He's not going to increase taxes on himself. But he's going to cut them for the middle class? Yeah, well, we'll see. But if he doesn't increase it on him and his buddies, cuts taxes on corporations, cuts taxes on the middle class, that really only leaves one place for that tax burden to be shifted, and that's the people who can't afford it. So he also reinstated Ronald Reagan's abortion global gag rule. What that does is it bars international health organizations that receive U.S. funding from mentioning abortion as a family planning option. Basically saying, hey, we'll fund you, but if you tell people that you'll perform an abortion, hey, we're going to cut funding. So now all these pro-life people who aren't pro-life at all when they don't want to give health care to kids or mothers and don't want to help kids eat or get educations, that's not pro-life, that's just anti-abortion. So all these anti-abortion people need to understand something very, very important. Anti-abortion legislation does not stop abortion. It stops safe abortion. Just like the drug war, it didn't stop drug use, it created a black market that perpetuates violence and death, and there is no control over purity or safety of drugs or needles or any of that, and it's all because of prohibiting legislation. Now, abortion's the same. There's going to be women desperate enough that they're still going to go get them, but it'll be in unsafe conditions by people whose training is unverifiable and questionable, and the risk of complications will skyrocket and people will die. Now, you can't really call yourself pro-life if what you're advocating is going to cause death. But I guess that kind of falls in line with a new trend we're seeing these days, which is where people are now using alternative facts. Now, this is kind of funny. All right, so this happened because of an interview with Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway, where she used the phrase alternative facts to cover for lies from Sean Spicer and from Trump. Now, the way Conway used this phrase is worrisome. It lends some validity to the ability of people like Spicer, Trump, Pence, Tillerson, hell, even Conway herself, to say whatever they want and present it as an alternative to the reality of any given situation. But the backlash from that phrase is even more concerning to me. It's a lot of people are, you know, they're framing it as alternative facts. They can just lie and say whatever they want. That's, you know, what's up to us. We've got to promote the truth, the truth, the truth. Right. Okay. So I put this in a thread on Twitter, and you can go find it and retweet it, share it with your friends, because this is important. The end game for this alternative facts narrative, while it's all fun and good to make fun of Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway and Donald Trump, the end game leads to some pretty scary things when you unpack it all. So my Twitter thread went as follows. Let's be absolutely clear. There are such thing as alternative facts. It's called spin, and the mainstream media engages in it regularly. For example, it is a fact that the inauguration crowds were very, very small. Visual proof makes this undeniable for thinking people. Now, it is also a fact that over half of the checkpoints leading into the inauguration were shut down. The rest slowed to a trickle. This undoubtedly affected the size of the inauguration crowds. More people would have been there had they been able to. Now, quick aside on this point. Yes, more people would have been there if they had been able to, but those crowds would still have been very small, perhaps small enough to fit into Donald's tiny hands. But continuing with the thread. Fact number one is used to show how few people support Donald Trump. Fact number two is used to show how many people actively oppose Trump. But fact number two puts a little shadow of illegitimacy on fact number one. Now, the mainstream media loves fact number one. I haven't heard much on fact number two. Yet both are demonstrably true. Which one is the alternative fact? Now, calling actual lies alternative facts is ridiculous, and Kellyanne Conway absolutely should be derided for it. But to attack alternative facts as outright lies in every case, which is what the mainstream media is doing right now, opens the door to worse things. It opens the door to shutting out differing or dissenting viewpoints based on actual facts, because mainstream media gives real facts. Yes, Donald Trump is lying. So is Spicer, so is Conway. But to begin an alternative facts are only and always lies rhetoric is dangerous. It takes us a few steps further down the path of shutting out alternative and independent media. It takes us further in the direction of having the U.S. people exposed only to what others deem real facts. This is dangerous to critical thinking. It is dangerous to political dissent. It is Orwellian. All right, guys, so that's all I got for today. Thanks for joining for this edition of A Mostly Accurate View. We're going to consider Donald Trump backing out of the TPP as our positive news story for the day. So, hey, a little ray of sunshine in this dark and dangerous times that we find ourselves in. But like I said before, and as always, guys, you can reach out to me, email me, amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. You can tweet at me. That's @mostlyscore_mostlyscoredirt. That's @mostly_accurate. You can find me on Facebook. That's facebook.com/amostlyaccurateview. Talk to me. Tell me something. There's a story going on in your area that hasn't been covered. You need to give it some attention. Hit me up. Send me some information. You like what I say. You don't like what I say. You disagree. You agree completely. Comments, questions, concerns, anything. Talk to me. Let's keep this conversation going, guys. Share with your friends. Talk to them. These things are important. And it's important that we talk about them and raise awareness so that we can stand up and fight. Because information is knowledge and knowledge is power. So we'll see you next time. And until then, guys, keep talking, keep thinking, and keep moving forward. Have a great day.